The sermon titled for the day is Part 2, Is Escape Possible? Celtic Spirituality and a Way Out. Well, I've decided we hadn't talked about the prison enough to get to escape as possible. So I'm going to talk a little more about the nature of the prison to get a feel and a sense for that, so that when we do escape, it's a thorough escaping and we don't return, in essence. The Unitarian Universalist organization, in its diligence for the search of truth and meaning, sometimes belligerently and I think sometimes gentle in our search for truth and meaning, we have a way of debunking stories and myths and looking at the starkness of history to try to get the kernels of history. And when we do that, there's a danger to do that. I think our last election was a sign of our search for our story. We had, in essence, one side whose pronouncement was bring back the language of reverence, and another side wasn't so much about that. But the attempt to bring back the language of reverence, I believe, is a search for our story, who we are as a people. And we all function in story, whether we're conscious of the scripts and the dynamics of our story or not. And as a matter of fact, we kind of function in two stories. We function in one story is our personal story that began at when we were children and when we were infants and we were born into a family system. A story began for us. We didn't necessarily write that story. A story was placed upon us. Whether we would have written it or not, it's another question. Part of the therapeutic process is deciding the story I received in my childhood, do I really want to live that story? And many of us know how difficult it is to rewrite a story or to write our own story when the story we received as children was given to us pretty intensely, as opposed to write your own story, my child. This is your life. Create what you want, move in the direction you want. Often we are pushed into a particular storyline. And an example of how that's personal, and I gave this example before, so it's not too much telling about my family and myself. Since my sister's here, I'll be careful about that. My brother was 5 years older than me, and as brothers go, especially if you have one who is impulsive and likes to win and is somewhat competitive, we would fight, but I could not win against my brother because he was 5 years older. So what I would do is we'd have fights and arguments, and I would lose, but during the course of the week, I would damage something of his. You know, some people would call that passive-aggressive. I would just call that pleasure in getting even. Of course, I'd pay a price because who else would do it in the house but me? So there wasn't much detective work that had to take place in that. After a while, that behavior becomes unconscious behavior. And some of us know about our partners and people in our lives that are conflict avoidant. And we don't even know we're conflict avoidant. And it's not the best way to go through time because that's intimacy issues and that. But part of my story that I'm not even conscious of was about being indirect with anger as I go through time. I live in that story, but I'm unconscious of it. We also live in a larger story, the story of our culture. We through the television, through media, we are handed a myth, and we live out a myth. I can remember when I realized that when I was 17, 18, 16, as the draft was getting close to my age, I began to realize and read more about Vietnam and how in Vietnam they were paving roads in the middle of the jungle as opposed to, in my mind at that point, whatever spreading democracy might have meant in preventing communists from sweeping over our country and ending our country. I began to realize that it may not have been so much about democracy in a real fight. It may have been about something else. And the cultural myth that I was handed for myself began to shatter and began to break down, and I have begun to question the very meaning of my existence as a citizen and as an American. So my mythological culture began to break down at that point, and that was a crisis. My faith culture, when I went to seminary and sitting in Theology 101, and have coming from my own experience in church as a conservative fundamentalist church, and I hadn't been in church until 16 or 17 years old, and I just thought all churches were the same and all churches taught the same thing and did not know about denominational wars and such. And so I'm sitting in theology, and the next thing I know, up on the blackboard were five different theologies, and mine was one of the theologies, and it wasn't the best theology. My faith myths broke at that point. We live in story, and we Unitarian Universalists are good at breaking down stories and myth. Yet at the same time, we human beings need story to make meaning and understanding, and if all I'm about is breaking down story and breaking down myths and dispelling meanings that I think have captured me and hold me a prisoner, if that's my life, I'm liable to live right out of story. And if I live right out of story, do I even exist at that point? Can I intellectually move myself so I do not even exist if I say all stories are false and do not contain truth? Story is how we structure our existence and meaning and how we understand. I cannot escape story. We cannot escape story. You cannot escape story. So we Unitarian Universalists, as good as we are trying to understand story, have to come to a point where if we're going to be responsible, we need to participate in writing our own story. It needs to have meaning for us. It needs to be congruent with our values, with our seven principles. It can't be a story we just bring in from the outside world and say okay to it, because it might not include my truest self. It might not include what's best for me. And I think we need to include several things, and I'm going to review several points and then move on that we've talked about before. But I'm going to say that a Unitarian Universalist story must include a story that began pre-patriarchy. We must, in our story, have a story of human beings existing before there was classism, before there was racism, before there was this patriarchy of male dominance, before there was standing armies that would take over other people and use them as slaves and steal their resources. Humankind hasn't always been that way. So our story must begin before that with some story. It doesn't have to be true, absolutely historically accurate, but it needs to raise the question that we humans existed differently than we exist today. And that's all a story needs to do, is raise that question. We've talked about Daniel Quinn's work, and I think Daniel Quinn is a good author and tells a good story about the movement from pre-patriarchy to patriarchy. And I think that in our story, we have to address and understand that at about 2,700 years ago, 2,600, 2,800 years ago, he talks about the emergence of salvationist religions. He said for thousands of years, human beings had stories about gods and believed in gods, but they did not have the story of salvationist religions. Judaism, Buddhism, Hinduism, religions that said there's something wrong with us as beings, therefore we need to be saved. He says it was the first time in human history that you see this cry that there's something wrong with us as beings, and we need an outside source to soothe our anxiety, to calm us, to make us feel good about who we are. That needs to be included in our story. Because that's not universally human for all time for the history that we have. So we need to understand why in the world did that appear at that moment, at that point in the 200 to 300 year period of history. I don't think coincidentally that was also a time in history that we see the first major slave revolts about the same time. I think that somehow needs to be in our story. How come at the same period of history, in the East and in the West, we have these salvationist religions emerging, and we have these slave revolts that were beaten down and slavery continued? When we feel bad about ourselves and we have no place to go, we do reach out for something outside ourselves. How many of you and myself have felt bad about ourselves, or we have felt negative, or we have had negative feelings and we had no place to go, and we reached outside of ourselves to soothe our being? Whether it be through relationship, whether it be through substance abuse, whether it be through an expression of anger, we get lost and we don't know where to go. And it's our story that needs to help us at that particular point. And our story needs a place to go. I just thought an example of a modern day myth that's emerging. And we can catch it right in the seeds of it emerging. And I may get flack for this, and it may not. You know, when you use here and now examples, you get flack. If you use historical examples, that's kind of okay. So I like here and now examples as a risk. And this example involves one of our, I won't say leaders, but known persons in our culture, Sarah Palin. How many of you remember the interview with Katie Couric with Sarah Palin? Okay. Today, what Sarah Palin has written in her book, in my view, is getting ready to run for 212, thinking of the Mayan world disaster. Sarah Palin running for president. In her book, she says that her campaign handler with McCain told her that Katie Couric had low self-esteem and that Sarah Palin agreed to the interview out of pity for her. Okay. Now, we have that reaction, and it's political crazy. Does it belong in a pulpit? Does it not belong in a pulpit? Let that go. She's creating a myth. She's creating a story, not for today. Because 2 years from now, nobody's going to go back and review that interview. But here we have in the book the written word. And that written word is going to take precedent. So if I've already decided that if I'm talking to somebody 2 years ago and I hear that, my response is going to be, would you please sit with me and let's search the internet and get the interview, then we can talk about it because we have the primary source. If a person's not willing to go to the primary source, or at least talk about bringing in other resources, I'm no longer going to have a dialogue about that with that person because it's a waste of my time and energy. So I'm going to save my time and energy because my time and energy is limited. However, I do think it's important that when we're in the here and now and we're searching for truth and meaning, we don't always just stay with history. We don't always stay with yesterday. We need to bring those same principles into the here and now, and we need to say publicly, somebody's rewriting history for a purpose that might not be so good for us in the future, and we need to be talking about it and bring it to light. And I think that is our responsibility. Joseph Campbell, speaking about living without story, without myth, even if that's possible, says this has to do with myths. And this is why I think human beings are vulnerable 2 years from now to read in a book and say, yes, this is true. We're vulnerable to internalize a story and make it our story, especially if it agrees with us and we already agree with it. But here's what he has to say. He says that people can no more function without a mythology, without a story, than an individual can function without a nervous system. It is the organizing principle of all our activities. It explains to us the meaning of everything we do. Spiritually, story is our nervous system. And yet stories can cause conflict, can cause agreement, can cause bliss, can cause happiness. Stories can cause wars. It doesn't matter whether the story is true or not. But yet we live in it. The other principle that I think we need to include in our story as Unitarian Universalists is a principle that is taught to us through philosophy. And in philosophy, and reading, it's a book, I think, Radical Hermeneutics or some kind of studying of how do we understand and the principles of understanding. I mean, I talk about a study. And in this book, this person says that Christianity is infused in the tapestry of Western civilization. Now, what does that mean? In the deep tapestry, in the woven tapestry of the myth that we internalize from being a child, we internalize the myth of Western civilization. It is in us, and he says, in the deep tapestry of that is Christianity. Now, Christianity is also a salvationist religion, emerging out of Judaism. Except Christianity is a bit different in this respect from Buddhism, Hinduism, Judaism. A significant part, not all of Christianity, a significant part of Christianity has this. And again, as we're writing our story as Unitarian Universalists, understanding the principle that early Christianity is infused in the tapestry of Western civilization, which means it's in me. It's in me. And I've got to deal with it. I might like some of the values and the principles, but I might not. So part of my search for truth and meaning is I want to know, what is the deep tapestry? What are the deep meanings, the deep things that I think are true that are in Western civilization, that just like my anger I was unconscious of how I was expressing it, that I might be living out a story that I'm unconscious of that my conscious mind I don't even agree with. I'm living in a way that if I fully knew the way I was living, I would say, no, I don't agree with that. But if I don't have that journey inward and I don't do this kind of study, I won't even know it. In early Christianity, you have a term called original sin. And original sin, had several meanings at first, but it makes sense to me when it first came out. It meant that we were born in a fallen world. And when the early theologians of the first and second century said we were born into a fallen world, well, the Christians at that point were being persecuted and killed and burned and fed the lions. I mean, for them, the world was fallen. And remember, at the same time, this is the world that needed salvation religions for people to feel okay about themselves. This is the world that would enslave people to meet their needs at total disregard for the life and the well-being of the other person. They are looking at a fallen world. It is a world that's governed by the values of patriarchy, not anything pre-patriarchy. Part of our story is to understand how that moves through time. So then comes a couple of theologians, Augustine, Martin Luther, John Calvin, who's about 1,000 years in there, that they began to say that this original sin isn't about a fallen world. This original sin is about you. Original sin is about who you are genetically. You are flawed genetically. There is nothing you can do. You are depraved. You are evil. And Augustine, he wrapped it around the sexual drive. You are evil because you have a sexual drive. You are evil because you exist. The sexual drive is innately human. What? I'm reading this and I'm going, what? He does something curious. Rather than work through his own personal issues from his own history about his issues about sexuality, If you have issues with sexuality, either yourself or your partner is going to say, we got to go talk to somebody about this to work through it, to try to understand it, so we can enjoy ourselves. So we can enjoy what it means to be human. Is what we want to be about. But not this theologian. He steps outside of what it means to be human, dissociates somehow, and says, rather than deal with the pain and the struggle of this, I'm going to create a theology that justifies my dissociation. I'm going to create a theology that's against humanity. A theology that's against us. Luther did the same thing. He was having this experience, and I'm reading it again, and for the life of me, he says he had this epiphany that God was a God of justice. Now, when I think, if we had a God of justice, thank God we got a God of justice. Yes, bring some order to this place. Make sure everybody gets their needs met. Everybody has health care. Everybody has food. I mean, everybody's living in such a way that's nurturing and good for one another. And we get to celebrate life. And people aren't oppressed so other people can have more. That classism disappear. Racism would disappear. Inner hatred would disappear. Justice. Is that what Luther does? Oh, no. He says, oh my God, God's a God of justice, and he has an experience of terror because he says, I'm going to get punished. I'm thinking, what? He fears God because God is a God of justice. My idea is God is a God of justice. I'm going to move closer. I want a God of justice. But no, he fears God. Then he does the same thing as Calvin. He steps out of what it means to be his human self, escaping the feelings of terror, escaping the fear of punishment, dissociating from those feelings, separating himself from those feelings, and says, only by God's grace can I be okay, rather than integrating his psyche that's separated from his body, integrating the psyche back into his body and feeling good about what it means to be human. He reinforces that theology. There's something wrong with what it means to be human. Now, everybody in this room would say, original sin, right? You don't believe in that. That's crazy stuff. Now we know that's a dissociative split. And we need to integrate ourselves to feel good about who we are as human beings. But as soon as I use that language, that's a dissociative split. We need to integrate ourselves to feel good about who we are as human beings and who we are. I started thinking, wait a minute. In the world of addiction, in the world of codependency, in the world of looking at negative self-beliefs, see, original sin is a closed system that's fueled and empowered by negative self-beliefs. I am no good. There's something wrong with me. How come I can't get it right? What's going on in my life that I can't actualize my potential? I'm stuck. What's wrong with me? These are the beliefs that emerge out of original sin. There's something wrong with me. These are the beliefs that Daniel Quinn talks about we humans have been struggling with for 3,000 years and more. There's something wrong with us because we live in a culture that's oppressive and creates slavery. What's wrong with us? And I got to thinking, wait a minute. Just because I say I don't believe in original sin does not mean I'm not suffering from that Christian tenet, but in a different language. Codependency, addictions, negative self-beliefs. I'm caught in the same loop, in a closed system that there's something wrong with me and I can't get it right, and how come I can't get it right? I'm still operative in the original sin. I'm still there. I haven't escaped it. Many people still seek salvation and grace from an external source when that happens. And have you ever talked to somebody and say, you know, you've got this, this, and this, and they say, yeah, that's just the way I am, and God's got to take care of it, and therefore I alleviate myself from the responsibility of taking care of my own in the world. How many of you ever been in a relationship when somebody says, that's just the way I am? not mine. We do that. And when we say that, what we're saying is, I'm living in a closed system that has a negative emotional flavor to it that's disruptive not only to my life, but to the intimacy and the relationships that I have with other people, also meaning the intimacy and the empathy that I can have in culture for the larger number of people that exist in our culture. Like, I would have empathy for somebody living in, say, California, whose health care was just removed from them while they're still in treatment, and I would cry out in outrage, no, that's wrong, rather than saying, well, that's too bad, that has nothing to do with me. A closed system that prevents me from feeling okay and okay about other people in the whole world, that prevents me from having intimacy with personal relationships, that actually has a punitive, harsh self-judgment within myself. Original sin. I'm still in it. And I don't know what to do about it. So I cry out. So when we search for truth and meaning, when I discover those kind of things about myself, in a Unitarian Universalist story, I can say, wait a minute, I can see pre-patriarchy and I can see what it meant to block off land and to lock up food and manipulate people to behave a particular way in order for me to gain. And I can see the need for salvationist religions. And that wasn't always universally true. That was true at a particular point in time because of the social and cultural context. And I can see how our culture has that in its foundation and still affects me today. I can see maybe a way to escape that belief, original sin. Maybe. I can see it. And then as I move through time and I get in the community and I'm listening to a minister talk, and he says, wait a minute, what is he saying? I don't have to live like that anymore? There's a way out of that? What is that way out of that? Because I've been struggling with negative self-beliefs. I've been struggling with codependency. I've struggled with addictions. I've been struggling with things that I've been doing that have been hurtful to myself all of my life. There's a way out of that? Yes, there's a way out of it. There is an escape. There is relief. If we search for something outside of ourselves, we will only perpetuate the inner self-destructiveness within ourselves. The search must go inward. However, there's a paradox. We also need to be in relationship with others for this to happen. It does not happen in isolation. I used to have a therapist that would tell me, and I never did like what, usually didn't like what she said, because usually it was true. If you cry by yourself, it's like drinking by yourself. Not like, wow, no, I don't like that one. Because it's easier to cry by yourself. But how many times have we been with somebody and we felt tears? We say, no, I can't do that here. Rather than be our truest selves and allow that which was in us to flow out. The answer is to recognize our story says there is an escape to that. That we don't have to be caught in that loop that lasts forever. And next week we'll get closer to that answer. And again, I would encourage us as a congregation that maybe this is the cutting edge of our spirituality and our spiritual growth. Taking to look to see how we're caught in these traps, and we're even unconscious that we're caught in these traps. But we are. But there is a way out. There is a way to move toward relief and intimacy with others and closeness within